and welcome. I'm Renee Kemp, and this is Your Call. Since taking office just a few short months ago, U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions has made some sweeping changes to the Justice Department and national policies. In one of his very first moves as Attorney General, the former Alabama Republican senator pulled the DOJ out of a lawsuit that challenged a strict voter ID law in Texas. By comparison, the Obama administration's DOJ had joined civil rights groups that argued that that law discriminated against minority voters. And in another departure from the previous administration, Sessions has pulled the DOJ back from investigating police departments and officers accused of abusive practices. And Sessions has also renewed efforts targeting drug offenders and undocumented immigrants. In a memo, Sessions directed all the federal prosecutors across the country in drug cases to, quote, charge and pursue the most serious, readily provable offense, including mandatory minimum sentences. He also directed federal prosecutors to pursue the harshest penalties for undocumented immigrants. Announcing the new priority in Arizona, Sessions said, quote, "For those that continue to seek improper and illegal entry into this country, be forewarned. This is a new era. This is the Trump era," unquote. So, just who is Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III, and what's his impact likely to be on how laws in our country are both passed and applied? We hope you'll join us today. We have two very well-informed guests about the DOJ and about Jeff Sessions himself. Joining me today is Karen Greenberg. She's the director of the Center on National Security at Fordham University School of Law. She's a noted expert on national security, terrorism, and civil liberties. And she's the author of several books, including Rogue Justice, The Making of the Security State, and The Least Worst Place, Guantanamo's First 100 Days. Karen Greenberg's work has been featured in the New York Times, the Washington Post, the LA Times, The Nation, and on major news channels. And she's joining us from New York this morning. Thanks for being here, Karen.
Thanks so much for having me.
Also joining us today, Matt Zabotosky, who covers the Justice Department for the Washington Post's national security team. And before that, Matt covered the federal courthouse in Alexandria, Virginia, and local law enforcement in Prince George's County and Southern Maryland. And Matt joins us from Washington, D.C., his backyard. Thanks for being here, Matt.
Hey, thank you for having me.
You bet. And we invite you to join this conversation today. What questions do you have for our guests? If you happen to have lived through different Justice Departments, just how does Sessions compare to previous AGs? Have you ever worked at the DOJ or any agency under the DOJ? And what may strike you about the DOJ under Attorney General Jeff Sessions? And what might concern you about the new policy shifts that are happening? They're really seismic shifts in how the DOJ does its work. And if you happen to be working on issues that are affected by the DOJ, how are these shifting directions applied to your work? What are your thoughts? We hope you'll give us a call. The number is 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. 866-798-8255. You can also drop us an email at feedback@yourcallradio.org or post a web comment at yourcallradio.org. Karen Greenberg, let's start with you. Let's do a basic primer. Just what does the Department of Justice do? Just what is the scope of their work? And just how much of an impact can any one attorney general actually have?
Well, Department of Justice can define its scope as broadly as they want, as you've pointed out in touching the topics and issues that it pertains to. But its job is to ensure that the laws of the land are being attended to, and there are a whole bunch of different divisions ranging from the Civil Rights Division to the National Security Division, many others, that have specific issues that they pay attention to. And there have been all different kinds of Department of Justices over the course of time, but most recently, since the War on Terror, there have been attorney generals who have been extremely invested in politicizing the department and in making sure that the politics, as well as the ideological bent or political bent of the attorney general, is put into policy and practice, and others who have been a little less engaged. So I think it's a very good question that you raised before. Which kind of attorney general is Jeff Sessions? One thing you can say for sure is that he very much wants to dismantle what Barack Obama and former Attorney General Eric Holder put in place, both in terms of drug policy, in terms of the way they want to interfere with immigration policy, the way they want to pull back, as you said, from suits against officers of the law who are accused of abusive behavior and racially inspired behavior. But, you know, we've seen other attorney generals like this, so let me give you an example in our recent memory. And so there are two that come to mind, and I think that we should think about him. And one is Attorney General Ashcroft, who was Attorney General after 9/11, who was very much on the page of President Bush in terms of policies embraced and his political persuasion. But in many ways, he was sidelined, and he was sidelined by the White House and the legal department at the White House. And much of what went on that was important in the Department of Justice went around him or bypassed him until it was too late. That doesn't mean that he didn't have his own agenda that he was engaged in, but he was replaced by Alberto Gonzalez, who had been President Bush's lawyer in Texas, and who he brought with him to the White House. And he was, much like Jeff Sessions, very much engaged in making sure that there was a seamless connection between the Department of Justice and the White House. And I'm sure that we can talk about this, but the point of the Department of Justice is to hold the government, among others, accountable. And so it can't be the private lawyer of the president of the White House and the executive. Their job is to advise and to represent the Constitution and the people. And so that's the quandary that we're in now, because the attempts to reform so many of the policies that are there now, and in many ways to, as I was saying before, bypass other kinds of processes that have been in place for a long time, including the role of the courts, is concerning.
Matt Zapatosky, you've covered Justice Departments. Compare and contrast this Attorney General with Obama Attorney General Eric Holder.
Well, it's just a seismic shift. I mean, I talk with this talk about this with my colleagues who cover the department, and it's just a different place. You know, every conversation you have with people in the Justice Department, the angle that they're taking on all sorts of issues, from immigration to voting rights to, I mean, civil rights in general, it's just a 180-degree shift. I mean, you think about some of President Obama and Eric Holder's policies on immigration, which were to, you know, defer enforcement on people who came to the U.S. as kids, to kind of soften up there. And, you know, Jeff Sessions is the exact opposite. He wants to crack down on sanctuary cities. He wants to close up the border. You know, he takes this such hardline stance, and it's a 180-degree turn from the previous Justice Department. Now, I would say, in response to Karen's point, is that The Justice Department has a policy role here. I mean, Eric Holder enacted policies that he and President Obama believed in. They have a law enforcement mission, of course, too, which you would hope would be totally independent of their political concerns. But the Eric Holder's policies reflected the politics of President Obama. And in a similar way, Jeff Sessions' policies reflect the political priorities of President Trump. He has sort of a bleak worldview on crime. He thinks we have a major immigration problem. He wants to take the handcuffs, is how he puts it, off police. It's just a more hard-edged Justice Department than we saw under President Obama, Eric Holder, and Loretta Lynch.
And so what is the check and the balance, if there is such a thing, given that there's now a Republican-led House and Senate, possibly right-leaning Supreme Court, and there's a Republican in the White House. Is there a check on the AG's influence at all, Karen?
Well, there is. I mean, there's right now we're seeing that kind of check, and we'll see how far it goes with the response of a number of cities to the sanctuary cities protest. In other words, a number of cities have said, you know, we're not going to cooperate with ICE when it comes to detaining individuals you target as immigrants that you want detained. And so we could see some real battles, and they will be resolved, I think, largely in the courts, but I think they're also going to be resolved somewhat in the public space, the public debate over that issue in particular, and I think over police brutality, could really come to a head in terms of citizens contesting and combating one another. And so much of these policies are going to, and the effect of them may play out at the local level. And I'm a little worried about it because there's a way in which there are violence is potential in any of these, particularly when it comes to the police brutality issues. And so the check may very much be, like in so much else of what I think is happening in this administration, on the local level.
Well, it appears Congress is about to take up Kate's law that's based on the attack on a tourist here at San Francisco, where a woman was killed by a man who had apparently been deported several times. And Kate's law would punish people who were here illegally if they had reentered three times or more with a minimum 10-year prison sentence. So it looks like Congress is literally taking up the very approach that both Sessions and Trump are advocating. So again, Matt, when you have that, it feels like a juggernaut there. So other than people demonstrating in the streets, what other kind of limitation is there?
Well, I think there's definitely the courts. There's no question about that. The courts have really struck down some of what President Trump probably hoped would be his signature policies. You know, he wanted to impose this crackdown on sanctuary cities by executive order. A federal district judge out west told him, no, you can't do that. He wanted to impose this travel ban, which some people call a Muslim ban. Had two versions of it. Both of those have been frozen by the courts. It hasn't gone to the Supreme Court yet, which, as you mentioned, just maybe went 5-4 in the conservative favor. But the courts have definitely served as a check on him. And I would say this of the Justice Department. Look, it's part of the executive branch of government. I think it has a reputation as being independent, holding everyone accountable, enforcing the law, and it certainly does that. But, you know, no doubt about it, it is part of the executive branch. And I think attorneys general throughout history, while they have enforced the law, they have also tried to create policy that the president wants. I mean, if you go back to the Kennedys, you know, the attorney general and the president were literal siblings. We're kind of, I think, closer to those days. Jeff Sessions and President Trump are very close. You know, Jeff Sessions says all the time, this is the Trump era, which doesn't probably, you know, bode well if you want him to be independently investigating people in the White House. But he sees maybe as more important his role in implementing the policy vision of the White House.
Yeah, I also think, though, that there's a all of that totally is fundamentally important. But I also think there's a tone here. This is a very combative tone that this attorney general has decided to strike. And yes, Bobby Kennedy was very strong about the positions that he was taking and the way he was going to use the courts and hope to use the courts and the way he used the DOJ. But still, there's a real sense of nastiness and of a sense that the country's gone down the wrong path and that needs to be addressed. And there's also a lot of, I hate to get into the fake news business, but there's also a lot of misuse of facts that is inspiring some of this behavior. For example, the case you mentioned at the beginning of this segment of the conversation, just what do immigrants have to do with criminal justice? And the statistics are much lower than they keep saying. So part of this, again, is about public education and the sense that it's so hard to have anybody you can trust with laying out the picture itself. I think the other thing is, and Matt be able to speak to this because he's down there and, you know, in contact with these people more, is following up on this demoralization within the Department of Justice. I mean, there are a lot of divisions of the department. I mentioned two of them before, the Civil Rights Division and the National Security Division, that are really don't know where they're headed. And their portfolios are being scrutinized, and their mission is being changed. And so I think that's an important thing to pay attention to as well.
Well, we certainly know that the State Department has pretty much been gutted. Has the DOJ had the same kind of cutbacks, proposed cutbacks, or is it being fully funded and staffed because of President Trump's agenda regarding the laws of the land?
Matt, do you want to take that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The budget proposal, I think, was a slight increase for the department. Look, it's law enforcement. They're always going to get their money. I think the big issue on staffing has been they haven't filled a lot of positions. Right now, I think you only have the top three people in the department who are Senate confirmed. You're missing all sorts of what they call assistant attorney generals who run the divisions like civil rights, like the criminal division, like the National Security Division.
Exactly.
They have some names that have been floated for them, but they're not confirmed, and that creates a real leadership vacuum. I mean, it matters to have a Senate-confirmed person in those roles. I do think the career people are sort of doing their jobs as they would. It's a bunch of professionals who, you know, aren't just in there for a couple years. Civil rights in particular, I would say, you know, they're in a major state of flux. A lot of the work they've been doing for the last several years is being undone in a matter of weeks or months, if you look what particularly what they've done on police consent decrees. So there might be some unease there. But as far as staffing goes, I think the big thing is, you know, they need to fill U.S. attorneys' jobs, assistant attorney general jobs, and do it, you know, sooner rather than later.
Listen, there are still 93 vacant U.S. attorney positions throughout the country. And this is, it may seem like a minor thing, but it means that Washington has much more of an impact on what goes on. Not that it doesn't regularly have some impact, but in all the district courts around the country. And so it's very concerning about this absence of these positions, just like it is in the State Department.
Well, it just so happens I was a reporter in Birmingham, Alabama, when Jeff Sessions was Alabama's attorney general. And at the time when he was prosecuting African Americans who were attempting to sign up and register voters. So I'm very familiar with his history. But I imagine that there are a lot of people, both Matt and Karen, who are wondering just what kind of an impact can Jeff Sessions have on the average American and what happens in their daily lives. Is this something that's far removed from the average American? And if people should be worried about the direction that his DOJ is taking, why should they be concerned? Karen?
Well, particularly, I think, in two cases, the cases of drugs and the case of drug cases and immigration cases. Why should people be concerned? The idea of repopulating our prisons, adding more beds to the prisons, and doing this in part because of wanting to prosecute much more harshly for drug crimes. We've seen where that what that does to families. We've seen how that can divide communities, particularly lower-income communities. This is something that can impact communities and families. Then it really depends on how you define the average American, because there are a lot of immigrants in the country right now, and they are worried in part about their status, and what they want to do will affect them. And there's another piece of this, just to follow up on something Matt said before, which is that one of my concerns about the Department of Justice is how they're using and going to use in the future the definitions of citizenship. And in a couple of cases that haven't received a lot of attention, they've, in one case successfully, taken naturalized citizens, Americans, and denaturalized them. And so this is a real concern for communities, for individuals, and will have a huge impact on families, which are already under enough pressure for many reasons.
We have a caller who is interested in talking about something related to mandatory minimum sentences. So let's go to Ruby in Mill Valley. Welcome, Ruby.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for letting me ask my question. I'm interested in knowing statistics, if we have data regarding the comparison between, let's say, the Bush years and the Obama years, as far as if we're more, we don't have mandatory sentencing, are there less, is the crime down? Do you get what I'm getting at? I'm not being too articulate here.
Well, actually, I guess what you're asking, Ruby, is there any proof at all that imposing or reimposing mandatory minimum sentences actually leads to a reduction in the crime around those issues, those drug issues? Matt?
Well, crime has dropped significantly since, oh, I don't know, the late 80s, early 90s, when we were sort of in the height of the crack epidemic, and it was a real problem. And that's when you had a lot of these mandatory minimum policies come around as kind of a reaction to that. I think a lot of law enforcement and legal experts say, though, that the mandatory minimums maybe weren't the driver in crime decreasing. Jeff Sessions sees it another way. You know, there were other factors, economic factors and other things that actually caused crime to decrease. So as we sit now, we're kind of at historic lows in crime. Jeff Sessions' view on this is because we've had a couple increases in recent years, in 2015 in particular, you know, he fears that this is a return to the 80s and the 90s. It's maybe an early sign of the return, and we need to restore those harder policies. But crime did drop through the Obama years, the Holder years, when, you know, you saw a relaxing of some of that, not in law, but in charging decisions. You know, I don't think there is any clear evidence that suggests mandatory minimums results in reduced crime, though Jeff Sessions certainly sees it that way.
So mandatory sentences amount to a solution in search of a problem.
Something like that. I mean, there's another component here, too, that I think Jeff Sessions would point people to, which is there's some component of justice in a sentence or in a charge. You know, you're not just looking to deter in the future. And he would say, you know, it's just logical. A longer sentence is more of a deterrent. It is actually not that simple, I would argue. But he would also say if you do a crime, you know, we need to satiate that American sense of justice. People expect that if you do a crime, you will go to jail for a long time. I'm somewhat sympathetic to that, but these mandatory minimums we're talking about are for drug crimes, you know, not murder or assault or something like that, where there's some justice to be gained. Jeff Sessions would say the drugs here are in huge quantities, and, you know, even if he can't prove it, all of these people are generally violent. You know, I'll let people interpret out of that what they will.
Yeah, but there's one other thing about that you're sort of pointing to, which is that this is a punitive approach. And one thing that the society has learned about drug-related crimes is that rehabilitation is also very important. And while you mentioned, you know, decreases in crime rates, while it may not have been done within the Department of Justice, the rise of alternative measures to helping individuals stay away from drug-related crimes has also been important. And the turn towards something harsh and punitive, while it may play well in theory, doesn't always play well in practice.
I think he made it a point,
absolutely.
Of making sure people knew there's a new sheriff in town. And I think that imagery is very important. I think that may even supersede everything, that this is a law and order administration. And that's what they've set out to prove. We have Karen Greenberg. She's the author of several books, and she's the director of the Center for National Security at Fordham University, and also Matt Zabotosky, who covers the Justice Department for the Washington Post. And there are lots of questions certainly related to the Russia investigation. We invite your calls at your call 866-798-8255. We're going to take a quick break and come right back.
Your call is better when you get involved. If you have a question, idea, or experience to contribute to today's conversation, call 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. 8255 toll-free. You can also send an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. You may leave a comment at the show's website, set a bookmark for yourcallradio.org, and you can also tweet us at yourcallradio. Some of our favorite people at KLW are sustaining members, listeners who make monthly ongoing donations to keep local public radio strong. Learn more, click on the support tab at klw.org, and thank you.
For those of you joining us, I'm Renee Kemp, sitting in for Rose Aguilar today. This is Your Call, and we're podcasting the show. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org, and you can listen to past shows and find out what's coming up next. And we love it when you have show ideas. You can drop us a line at feedback@yourcallradio.org or call us at 866-798-8255. Coming up tomorrow, it's our media roundtable. We will be discussing the Trump administration and the Paris Climate Agreement. Journalist and environmentalist Bill McKibben of 350.org joins us. He'll be discussing the coverage of this climate agreement and the potential consequences if the U.S. has pulled out. What did you think of the climate reporting this week? Join the conversation. That's tomorrow on Your Call at 10 a.m. Your guest host will be Mark Hertzgard. Today, we're talking about the Justice Department under Attorney General Jeff Sessions. We're joined by Karen Greenberg, Director of the Center on National Security at Fordham University, and Matt Zabotosky. He covers the Justice Department for the Washington Post's National Security Team. Please join us. We want to hear what your thoughts are. Have you had any reason to have any contact with the justice system since the advent of the Sessions Justice Department? And what are your concerns about the DOJ's policy shifts? Let's go to Ruth Ann in El Cerrito. Ruth Ann, thanks for joining us.
Good morning. This is a little bit different from the tack you all have been taking. I was interested in if there were any rumblings at the DOJ or Jeff Sessions particularly about cutting back the reach of the Americans with Disabilities Act. Granted, the California laws about access are way stricter than the federal laws, but this would have an impact across the country for states that don't have the strength of California's Title 24.
Matt Zabotosky, you want to tackle that one? Thanks, Ruth.
I certainly haven't heard anything about them curtailing that, and I think they've actually issued some press releases about some settlements that typically in cases like that they go after civilly an organization or a healthcare facility or whatever it is, and then reach a settlement. And then they have promoted some settlements, which is something that they have done in the past. I haven't heard anything specifically on that, but I'm not saying that's not something that they could cut back.
Let's talk a bit about the Russia investigation that seems to have sucked up all the air in the room, at least for a time. It's certainly become a major issue for the administration, including Attorney General Jeff Sessions. So what role is the DOJ playing in that investigation? Either one of you can tackle that one.
Well, there's a couple of things to say, and Matt's actually written about some of the characters that are going to be involved in this, so we can talk about it. But look, Rod Rosenstein has appointed Robert Mueller, former director of the FBI, to head the Russia investigation. And what's interesting, I think, in today's breaking news is that they're thinking about perjury charges against Jeff Sessions. I don't know if this will come to anything, but two senators have brought that discussion into public. And so the question is, what role will the Department of Justice have? And the other question is, to what extent, how broad was Jeff Sessions' recusal of his involvement in the Russia investigation? On the one hand, he gave himself a very broad recusal when he announced it, and what experts are saying, both inside and outside the Department of Justice, is that it didn't have to be that broad, and he can really just narrow it to the election and the interference in the election and what the Trump team, what went on with the Trump team and the Russians. So that would leave him free for other things, but I really don't think for anything about Russia. This investigation, and I'd love to hear Matt on this, but this investigation just seems to me is going to, as you said, not just suck all the air out of the room, but every single day there seems to be another bit of information that makes individual members of the Trump administration look like they were having the kind of relationships with Russian businessmen, politicians, and others that are not okay for people coming into office who have been elected to president, who are about to be elected for president, or who are actually in power. And so this seems like a train that's gathering steam day by day, and the Department of Justice is going to be in the middle of it because, A, Sessions is one of the people that's involved in the investigation in its own way, and because Robert Mueller is somebody with an extremely tough sensibility. He's a tough prosecutor. He was a strong attorney general at a very difficult time, meaning the post 9/11 decade. And this investigation is going to dominate, I think, headlines for a very long time to come.
Matt Zapotosky, you've certainly done a lot of reporting on this issue. Everyone keeps saying where there's smoke, there must be fire. It almost appears as if the roof is on fire. Especially, I'm not sure if the new possibility of perjury charges stems from yet another unreported contact with the Russian ambassador that was just released today, or if we're talking about the previous testimony that he gave. So, Matt, what is your thinking about the direction this investigation is taking under Robert Mueller, and how is it likely to impact Jeff Sessions and the DOJ?
Well, I think, first off, it is definitely heating up. In recent weeks, we have seen there's been reporting on subpoenas, grand jury subpoenas. We understand that they are or are going to start doing interview requests in this investigation, and those are kind of significant because when they're taking steps like that, they know that they can become public because the FBI can't control that. If they ask somebody to interview with them, the person that they ask to give an interview can go talk about it. If they issue a subpoena, the person who receives that subpoena can talk about it. You do that in investigations that are really serious. This is not some cursory look. This is heating up. As far as Jeff Sessions' involvement in this, I think he definitely has questions to answer. The most significant are probably the ones we already know. Why did he tell Congress he had no contact with Russians during the campaign or no communications when, in fact, he had? There were two instances, and this has all been publicly reported, but where he had interacted with Sergei Kislyak, who's the Russian ambassador. A lot of the reporting today has focused on this April 2016 event at the Mayflower Hotel. And the FBI, we understand, is looking into this event, exactly why or exactly what is raising their suspicions about this event. I can't say that we know here at the Washington Post, but we do know that Jared Kushner is there, Jeff Sessions is there, Sergei Kislyak is there, and Donald Trump is there, and Donald Trump gives sort of a pro-Russia speech at this event. Now, you know, some of the reporting from CNN yesterday focused on how Congress, as opposed to the FBI, though I think they said the FBI too, is looking at whether Jeff Sessions met with Sergei Kislyak at that event. Jeff Sessions has said, no, we didn't. We just both happened to be there. This is not like a third meeting in addition to those previous two. And CNN did not report that they had met there, just that it was being looked at. We know, too, that that event was being looked at. I don't know that I would go so far as to suggest they have met because I don't have any evidence of that. But it is interesting. This guy's the Attorney General of the United States, and he's mixed up in this a little bit. You also have Jared Kushner, who's, you know, probably the top person in the White House, who's mixed up in all of this, and he has other issues outside of this April event. So, you know, to me, there is nothing more significant than this right now, although I have heard, and I think there's good reason to discuss this, like, this doesn't necessarily impact people's lives in the way that Jeff Sessions' policies on immigration or mandatory minimums do, but it is the thing that everyone is most interested in, and it's very important.
One might even say huge. Matt, you reported, you actually said that Yes, you reported yesterday that President Trump is interviewing FBI directors. Is there, and it turns out that Jeff Sessions, despite his recusal, may be involved in the selection of that person. So is there any real concern that the new FBI director, whoever that is, could impede the investigation into the Russian potential collusion in the election and the potential Trump candidates? And is there any chance that that person could impede the investigation?
So Jeff Sessions is definitely involved in selecting the FBI director. He and Rod Rosenstein, who's the deputy attorney general, interviewed the first batch of candidates. And my understanding is they're trying to interview all these new candidates before they get to President Trump. It's just one of these awkward things. Jeff Sessions recuses himself from a case, a huge case that, you know, was on the president's mind when he fired the FBI director. But Jeff Sessions is still the attorney general. I mean, he can't totally recuse himself from doing his job. And the FBI director answers to the attorney general. I think the appointment of Bob Mueller puts to rest a lot of fears that people in this world had about possible interference in the investigation. Even if President Trump were to appoint an FBI director who would want to do that, it's Bob Mueller's purview now. In this context, Bob Mueller would almost outrank the FBI director. But Bob Mueller still reports up to the Deputy Attorney General, Rod Rosenstein, who appointed him. Just because of the quirk of this law, he doesn't have day-to-day supervision of the special counsel, but he can veto key decisions. Those have to be reported to Congress. There's more oversight of those. So it's not impossible that there could be influence on the special counsel, but given Bob Mueller's reputation and given the sort of built-in protections in this statute, I think that in this regulation, I should say, I think that most people are pretty confident that Bob Mueller is going to see this thing to where it needs to go.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think there are a couple things. One is that the question is, how hard will the new FBI director make it for Mueller? In other words, he could make things go more slowly. He could obstruct what's going to happen. But I think in the end, the consensus is that Mueller and Rosenstein will prevail in doing the investigation that they want to do. And the FBI director reports to the Attorney General. The Attorney General has to be involved in the decision. But they haven't made a decision yet, and it's interesting to see the direction in which the new names that are coming up are, because they're less highly politicized names. And so I think there is a direction in the sense that this has to be a person that has some kind of buy-in and just does not just seem to be a really harsh partisan appointment. I want to come back to something else about Sessions and the meeting with the Russians. You know, one of the things that people say about Jared Kushner and others in the Trump White House is when they say, no, it's okay, you're allowed to do that. We're allowed to meet with them. That doesn't violate anything. It's good to consult with foreign leaders. There is a sense of amateurness in the White House that is completely disturbing. And people who don't know what their roles are, who don't understand the political environment, and who don't know the law, actually, for the positions that they hold. Jeff Sessions is not one of those individuals. He knows the law. And I think I'd like to separate him out from the others in this way. For the Attorney General to violate laws that have to do with meeting with foreign dignitaries and perhaps with discussing things that he shouldn't have discussed seems to me a step even further than individuals who are new to the job, who haven't been briefed, who are under the gun. And I'm not saying that makes them innocent, but it distinguishes them from the Attorney General.
I'm also wondering the extent to which the Russia investigation, because it is so overarching, how has it maybe drawn attention away from other major policy shifts at the DOJ? I'm not sure whether it's a deliberate sleight of hand and ledger domain or whether it's just kind of working out that way, that there is a lot going on, especially domestically here, that's not getting a lot of attention. And Matt, I'm just wondering if you think that it might be that we'll look up a few months down the road and there will have been a lot done under Jeff Sessions' DOJ that we didn't even see coming.
Well, I think that's possible. I mean, we have a lot of reporters on the Justice Department beat now, and I think everybody does. It's largely in part because of the Russia investigation, but it's not like that's the only thing that takes up our time. I do know from sort of seeing what people are clicking on our site, you'll have what otherwise would be major stories, you know, big court decisions about the travel ban, you know, big clarification of what is meant by sanctuary cities and what he intends to do with sanctuary cities. And even if we put those on the front page or prominently on the homepage, people are so focused on the Russia investigation. It's not that they're not engaging in the policies, but they probably are engaging a lot less than they otherwise would be if the Russia investigation was not happening.
Right, and that works in both directions, because look at the Wikimedia case and the surveillance issue that's being litigated in the courts right now. And under normal circumstances, I think there would be a lot more attention paid to whether or not these policies are going to continue after the time they're supposed to sunset, or whether or not they will end. And these are getting very little attention, except for in the Washington Post, of course, which is covering all of this. Mm-hmm. But
well, if you're just joining us, Karen Greenberg is an author, and she's director of the Center for National Security at Fordham University. Matt Zapatosky covers the Justice Department for the Washington Post. And we invite your calls, 866-798-8255. Let's go to Anthony in San Francisco. Hi, Anthony.
Good morning. It really seems to me that the changes that Session is making are helping the Republicans maintain their minority control of both the federal government and state governments, not litigating Voting Rights Act cases, tough on crime so people lose their voting rights. I wonder if you all could comment on that.
Either one of you. Matt?
Well, the voting rights thing is definitely an issue that I think political people look at and say this is so clearly a tool to disenfranchise likely Democratic voters. You mentioned, I think, at the outset of the show, this case in Texas where the Justice Department backs away from this argument that Texas's voter ID law was intentionally discriminatory. They end up losing anyway, which is so bizarre. Not losing, I guess winning. They were out of it. But civil liberties groups pursue the case forward, and they win. The courts all agree that this law is intentionally discriminatory. But it just shows you the lengths to which justice is willing to go to, you know, adopt these Republican positions. I think this is a little outside the justice space, but President Trump has really banged the drum on the issue of voter fraud and even established a commission to investigate it. This is just an issue. I mean, it's not even an issue. There's just so few cases of voter fraud. And, you know, he makes these outlandish suggestions that there are 3 to 5 million people who voted illegally in the last election, and that's why he lost the popular vote. There definitely, I think, is a little bit of a tie between, you know, the partisanship and Justice Department policy, particularly on the voting issue. And I think Democrats would say, look, that's just to help Republicans win elections.
Karen Greenberg, you've written extensively about the DOJ under both Bush and Obama and now Trump. And I'm just wondering what your thoughts are about the politics and the extent to which the policies that Jeff Sessions is carrying out have political ends.
Yeah. Well, I do think they have political ends, and I think, as Matt said, that's not unusual in using a Department of Justice to steer the country. What I do think is we're going to see differently is, partisanship aside for the moment, the courts, for the most part, after 9/11, when it came to issues like national security and, in some cases, civil rights issues that were associated with national security litigation, the courts very much were willing to take a back seat. It's the executive, it's wartime, we're in danger, and we're just not going to interfere. And yes, the Supreme Court made a few decisions that were important about detainees at Guantanamo, but for the most part, whether it was surveillance or detention or a variety of other things, the courts step back in a very decisive and disappointing way. What you started to see at the end of the Obama administration and big time in these first moments of the Trump administration is the court stepping up to the task. The Muslim ban, travel ban issue is only one example. And I think that this is where you want to look for a kind of resurgence of authority on the part of the courts and pushing back. And the Trump administration knows this. And so one of the things they've done, they may not be filling U.S. attorney positions with any particular speed, but they are looking to fill judgeships all around the country, recognizing how important the courts can be in carrying this message to reality. And so in terms of justice in the country, not just the Department of Justice, but the longer arm of justice and the ways it plays out, my focus is on the courts. I think they're going to play a very big role here, and it looks like this is a role that, unlike in the past decade and a half, is a role that they want.
I'm wondering if you see any such thing as continuity at all between the Obama and Trump administrations on DOJ policy. Any continuity at all?
So there are certain things that we're just not hearing anything about, and these may seem very minor compared to the other things we've talked about, but they're big in my world. And they include things like Guantanamo, indefinite detention, the military commissions. This is an area of policy that the Department of Justice has a role in. And right now it looks continuous, but I'm not sure what's going to happen. I think in a way it may be that Guantanamo and the military commissions in particular become bigger and stronger and more I don't want to say viable, but in their eyes, more viable. And so that's one of the things that's right now continuing, and we'll see where that goes. But I'm sure Matt sees some continuities elsewhere as well.
Okay, let's go to Vicki in San Francisco. Vicki?
Hi. The reason I'm calling is I'm old enough to remember George Wallace standing up, shaking his fist, and saying, segregation today, segregation tomorrow, segregation forever. And that's what I'm worried about with Jeff Sessions and his changes to the prison sentencing guidelines. And I think he's also interested, and I think this administration is also interested in filling the pockets of private corporations that run private prisons and giving them a cut. And so what I'm afraid of in the Jeff Sessions Justice Department is condoning overt racism and going soft on white violence against people of color. And I'm really worried about that. And also I'm really worried about dropping the ball on, you know, police murdering people because they're scared.
Okay, thank you, Vicki. Karen, it occurs to me, and obviously to Vicki, that there is something just really craven about the Justice Department under a Jeff Sessions. Is it a misplaced concern, or should citizens really be worried about what we see unfolding under this Department of Justice?
You know, just so you know, I'm usually a person who says, don't worry. But in this case, I think worry is justified and important. It looks and feels like racism in policy in a number of ways, that's the direction in which they want to move, whether it's voting rights, whether it's prisons, whether it's drug reform. It's just, whether it's the immigration policy, there just seems to be a profound and untethered embrace of racism. And I think it is something to be concerned about, and I think it's important to make those concerns known publicly, and for this is where the Democratic Congress really needs to step up and reclaim whatever ground they've lost in the public space.
Well, as a minority party, what good does that do?
Well, they have to focus on the next elections, which I think everybody agrees are extremely important. I also think that, you know, we talk about the media and the media wars and trading facts,
But I think we've really lost the ability to educate the public in a way that there are certain places we're on the same page. And I think that's the challenge, and I'm not sure where that comes from, but that is what I see as the challenge for people both inside and out of government to begin to understand how to better educate our population. I think the racism we're seeing is really surprising many of us, myself included. We thought that was back with George Wallace, and that we'd gotten beyond that and they were a different kind of country. And what the Trump supporters have shown us is that we're not as different a country as we thought we were, and I think this is really deeply troubling.
Matt Zabotosky, Karen says, be afraid, be very afraid. Your thoughts?
Look, I would say, I guess, that Jeff Sessions did take some criticism at his confirmation hearing for comments he had made in the past that people said were racist. I would say, though, that on a lot of these policies, there is a conservative side. But, you know, with the mandatory minimums, I used to work out work as a reporter, but covering a U.S. attorney's office. And I can remember when Eric Holder issued guidance saying sort of back off these mandatory minimums, don't charge the quantities of drugs. And a lot of prosecutors out there were not happy about that. They wanted that tool in their toolbox to be able to leverage plea agreements and to go after people that they thought were hardened criminals. So, you know, I certainly think it's fair to wonder whether there's another justification here, but some of these policies are embraced by mainstream conservatives. Jeff Sessions was pretty far right even in his own party, but some of these policies, mainstream Republican lawyers are on board with them, and I think they would really bristle fairly at the suggestion that they were racist.
Right, and that's why I pointed earlier to, I agree with you, but that's why I pointed earlier to the tone and the tenor in which the Department of Justice and Sessions in particular are willing to discuss these ideas. These are not up for discussion. They're said in a sort of spiteful, nasty way, and I think that this lack of, for a better word, decorum, makes it all the worse.
Well, I'm going to call that your final thoughts, Karen, and also for Matt. You've been hearing from Karen Greenberg, director of the Center on National Security at Fordham University, and from Matt Zabotosky. He covers the Justice Department for the Washington Post. Thank you both so much for joining us. Tremendous insight. Don't you love the word tremendous? Thank you both so much. And thanks to our listeners for tuning in and for your emails and phone calls. Sorry we didn't get to all of you, but coming up tomorrow, tune in for the Media Roundtable, where we'll have a conversation about the Paris Climate Agreement and coverage of other major news stories of the week as well. Your call is produced at KALW. To listen to past shows or to sign up for the podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Laura Flynn produced today's show. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. Kevin Vance is our studio engineer. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. I'm Renee Kemp, sitting in for Rose Aguilar. This is Your Call.